Welcome to the Dumb Phone Show. My name is Jose Briones, and today we have Joe Hollier, who is the creator of the Light Phone. How's it going, Joe?
Going great. Thanks for having me.
No, thanks for being here. We're excited to talk to you about your journey with digital minimalism, dumb phones, and everything in between. So for those of our listeners who do not know you, can you give us just a little introduction, where you're from and how did you get started with dumb phones?
Yeah, my name is Joe Hollier. I'm one of the co-founders of Light. We've been working on a project called the Light Phone for about 6 years. Previous to that, I was an artist, designer, filmmaker from Brooklyn. I studied at the School of Visual Arts, graphic design, and I've been living in Brooklyn for about 12 years.
Well, that's good to hear, Joe. And tell us a little bit more about what started you on this journey, the dumb phone journey, or just feature phones, digital minimalism, things of that nature.
Well, I think in my practice as, you know, an artist and a filmmaker, I worked on a lot of things like stop motion animation, which are a very solitude process that which requires a lot of, you know, focused hours at the studio, undisturbed, and which usually meant, you know, no phones around, no distractions. So it was actually, you know, a place I was quite familiar with and cherishing. And I realized that as smartphones became more and more of a, you know, crucial aspect of that business, I found myself checking emails from clients while, you know, on a dinner date with my girlfriend, or, you know, on the weekend while skateboarding, I'm, you know, seeing feedback about things that I can't actually do anything about. So I realized that I wanted to set some more boundaries in my life. And then 6 years ago, when this opportunity came to be a participant in this incubator called 30 Weeks, it was actually ironically sponsored by Google. And they asked different designers and artists about, you know, creating new kinds of technology companies. And when I started to learn the other side of the, you know, smartphone app industry, the attention economy, as I, the term I really like for it, I kind of realized, you know, my happiest times were when I was disconnected and, you know, kind of able to experience my own life and being present with either, you know, my friends or my work or with nature. And I really wanted to encourage other people to take that kind of step back to, you know, remember that we didn't always have the internet 24/7 in our pocket. So starting the Light Phone in this incubator program was really kind of my first introduction to the dumb phone market. We actually, you know, wanted to test our hypothesis, which was people might enjoy taking a break from smartphones. And what we used was flip phones. We bought a few prepaid phones and we started giving them to users and seeing how they enjoyed or not, you know, taking a break from their current smartphone. So it's been about a 6+ year journey in terms of the dumb phone space.
You know, the word that kind of came to me as you were discussing a couple of these things was the word boundary. So you talked about boundaries and that division in between the time where you have focus time and the time where you were maybe distracted or checking emails. How have you managed those boundaries and your journey for over 6 years now? You created two products, first the Light Phone and now the Light Phone 2. And, you know, a lot of people have benefit out of that. But how are those boundaries have become more flexible as you have to engage in marketing and production and social media? How have you managed during this period?
Well, I mean, the funny joke of it is that I find myself way more connected in trying to run the Light Phone, perhaps, than maybe I even was prior. And I mean that from, you know, answering emails, trying to be active on various social media platforms or the internet at large. But I think the way that we balance it is kind of the same as anyone might experience or anyone's experience might be, which is, you know, I go to work on my laptop predominantly, or, you know, at our office when we were able to do that. And that's, you know, the machine that I'm able to be super productive and utilize the internet for all of its, you know, benefits. I mean, from to step all the way back, you know, I don't know if we would have been able to launch the Light Phone without the internet and crowdfunding and these tools. So, you know, using the internet in that way day in and out. But, you know, at the end of the day, when I close the laptop and, you know, maybe go out to hang out with some buddies, I only have my light phone. And I think, you know, it's definitely it's something we practice very regularly, and it would be hypocritical of us to not. But I think it's in those moments of resetting that I'm also able to have this kind of profound moment where I realize that I'm working on something that I'm like truly passionate about. And so it kind of, you know, rejuvenates the spirits, so to speak. So when I come back to, you know, the internet overload and the huge list of emails to get through, I'm kind of, you know, at a different peace of mind than if I was just constantly drowning in them, which sometimes it feels like is the alternative.
You know, as you mentioned there, it's a very fine line in between doing all of these things and continuing to develop a company, you know, especially as the light phone continues to grow and the community continues to grow, you are finding more people who are maybe sending you emails of support, needs, you know, things of that nature, maybe different ideas and things that will happen in the future. But something that I'm encouraged by hearing you is that you have been able to separate some of that time in between I'm at work and then I am just my personal time with friends or family, things of that nature. Something that I guess we have never discussed, even though, you know, we had about 45 minutes in the channel, on the YouTube channel, where we discussed more technical things about the light phone. But if you would like to answer, is essentially more about your personal life and the changes that it has made in your personal circle. You know, you grew up in an era where there were dumb phones. You also grew up in an era where there were smartphones. But what about your family or friends, experiences that you have had in kind of like setting this vision in the future that you want more people to capture what the light phone can do for them? How has that been with friends and family?
I mean, if I think I'm understanding you correctly, you mean how has the light phone or using the light phone affected those relationships, or is it more about like trying to convince my friends and family that they should ditch their smartphones and get a light phone?
Well, you know, it's kind of a little bit mixed for you specifically. I mean, for me, for example, I have a light phone, right? I am someone that uses it. I bought it from the company, right? But you have this special kind of like position in which you adopted this philosophy, right? So yes, the first question is, how has it affected you, your family, and your friends? But also, as a representative of your company, how has that interaction, do people feel like you're a proselytizer for this philosophy or of sorts?
Yeah, I mean, I think at the highest level, I definitely noticed some funny kind of like guilty second takes happening when I would first kind of talking about the project, where my friends would like catch themselves on their smartphone and then kind of be like, oh man, I'm sorry, Joe. As if, you know, I was some, you know, kind of like stickler. But I really have never tried to push the light phone on anyone, especially not my friends or family, which I will admit that there's only a handful of my friends that have actually tried or used the light phone. And I think it's something we've tried to always be self-aware enough that it isn't for everyone, and not necessarily everyone needs a light phone. And there's even ways to find balance, perhaps without a light phone. But I think having used one for so long, inevitably the ways in which I communicate with my closest friends and families has definitely, you know, changed. Yeah, I used to be part of a really big group text message about skateboarding with a bunch of skater friends in Brooklyn. And, you know, I don't really participate in that anymore without iMessage. And, you know, it hasn't been a real hard transition at all. I still am able to, if I want to, reach out, but I'm maybe not participating in the every 30 minute meme back and forth that's going on. But I also realized that, like, that actually probably wasn't something I personally wanted to be a part of in that capacity either. It's more important to me to still get out there and see them on Saturday with our skateboards than, you know, to have those kind of constant group chats. And I, you know, everyone's kind of different, but I think setting these different expectations around how to reach each other. I think, you know, a lot of my friends are also artists and we have like an email relationship for kind of these longer ongoing threads where we're sending each other videos and pictures and things that I can't do on the light phone, but those aren't tied to any time pressure. So it's okay if I don't reply till next Tuesday. And, you know, it's kind of more of a pen pal letter writing. And so there's different relationships. Obviously my girlfriend wants to be able to call me when she wants to be able to call me and I still have the phone. And, you know, most of my friends do probably call me versus shooting me long text. And I think those things are part of adopting to the lifestyle. And, you know, if my friends have any animosity against me, they haven't showed it.
Well, that's good to hear that you still have friends and family that are willing to, you know, just communicate. And if they have it, maybe, you know, they'll communicate it at some point in time. But luckily they don't. And I'm pretty sure, you know, it's kind of like a similar experience where my family and my friends, they know when to contact me or how to contact me more towards, you know, kind of like long-term conversations or long-form calls instead of just text messages. Because, I mean, the nature of using feature phones makes it a little bit more difficult to have that constant access. I'd like to talk to you a little bit about the challenges of going light. You know, you live in a big city. And in big cities, you know, there are a lot of, or at least the restaurants and, you know, just the community itself continues to go and propagate more tech tools, especially nowadays with coronavirus and, you know, the things that have been happening in 2020, now that we're into 2021. How have you found difficulties in your daily life, you know, for those inconveniences? And how have you overcome them since you've been doing this for about, you know, 6 years now?
Yeah, I mean, I will admit, I don't really notice too many personal inconveniences. So maybe it's just because I've accustomed to living this way that I'm not, you know, feeling, you know, like I'm missing anything in any given moment. But some examples I can think of, Citibike is quite popular here. It's sponsored by Citibank. It's like the kind of public bike share, I guess you could call it. You can use a debit card to access it or get a key fab, but most people use a smartphone app to be able to check where the electric bikes are or, you know, to rent it without needing their card. And, you know, I obviously couldn't do something like that from the light phone, but I've never really found myself needing to do that. I have a bike. I like to walk. And the few times I've taken a city bike, I just pay with my debit card. So there's perhaps like, you know, these kind of like little minor pain points. I think one of the biggest ones for most people is probably ride sharing or lack of ride sharing. Especially in New York City, that's a very common thing. A lot of people don't drive. And so taking a ride share home, I've kind of become accustomed to living in the city prior to having that as an option. So I've sort of, you know, always known how to navigate public transit or walk or, you know, memorize one or two taxis for my neighborhood's phone numbers. So, I mean, I hardly find myself even calling taxis other than the occasional airport, but you know, they haven't really been huge pain points for me. I think a little bit more perhaps about, where my day is going when I was taking a lot more face-to-face meetings. If I was going around, I might jot down the two or three meetings for the day, their cross streets or whatever, just so, you know, I could reference it on my self really quickly. But other than that, I mean, I think a lot of people fear that they won't be able to look up a pizza place or a cafe. But I always thought the joy of visiting a city was stumbling upon a new cafe or pizza joint. So it's, you know, I guess it's different personalities, but like some people want that instant answer and someone to tell them where they should go. And I kind of would rather like walk around and curiously, you know, is this place look sketchy? No, it's got a line. Maybe it's pretty good, you know, and kind of feel it out more that way. And it's, I don't know, I guess I really like to walk. So I always see that as like a positive. I'm outside, I'm on the street, taking in the city, getting a little bit of much needed exercise. So
you mentioned there something which it kind of comes to me from different perspectives, you know, and as I have been on this journey, on my personal journey, right? I've come to this realization that sometimes these fears can be a little bit inflated. I took a trip to Chicago a couple of months ago now to visit a friend. And, you know, there were still cabs available. There were still, you know, paper directions. Even, you know, during, you know, the whole crisis that we have been living in the world. Do you feel that these fears are have been maybe not, they're not real. It's not that they're not real. They're real, you know, for a lot of people. They may have things, important information on their phones, or they need quick access. But they have been pronounced because of the way that technology has been developed. Do you feel like that's just part of the reality in which we live, that these conveniences have been made to be almost part of our lives? And if they're not there, that we're missing something as a part of our humanity?
Yeah, I think that's certainly true. And it definitely seems like what a lot of people feel like when they either think about trying going light, you know, before even giving it a shot, and they try to even imagine, could I ever do that? They're like, no, 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 I could never go anywhere without maps. When, you know, exactly as you mentioned, 15 years ago, we all kind of went everywhere without these little maps in our pockets. So I do think, you know, there's some probably degree of exaggeration. I think there is some merit to their statements, you know, like technology being able to make sure you know where you're going in a city you've never been before is a huge comfort for a lot of people. And, you know, I try not to disregard that because I like to roam a new city and not really know where I'm going. And I'm okay with that kind of uncomfort. You know, it's worth, you know, giving, acknowledging the ways in which these smartphone tools have helped us. I think there was one user from the original iPhone that described that like kind of choice moment in the morning when he was like, do I take my light phone or do I take my smartphone? And he said there was just like, seemed like an infinite number of excuses for why he might take the smartphone. And he kind of like stopped in that moment to be like, where are these coming from? You know, why is it like this strong pull where I'm thinking about what if maybe this one person Facebook messages me? And he's like, you know, that's not even urgent. And he, you know, was really able to elaborate on how the body just loves our comfort zone. And the idea of getting out of that can really scare us. And he said, you know, that when he took his light phone, he was a father and went to the park with his kid, he even found himself bored a couple of times, but he was able to kind of sit there and be like, you know, this is me being the best dad I can be today. I'm not checking emails while I'm pushing my kid on the swing. I'm sitting here and watching him. And then, you know, that kind of FOMO does go away and you start to, you know, forget about and then really enjoy your day. So I think for a lot of people who use the light phone successfully, they've probably experienced some of that friction and then have, you know, seen the positive benefits that kind of outweigh that friction or that, you know, desire to, you know, come back to what we're used to. I've heard countless stories of people, especially around the directions where, you know, they had to ask someone for directions and then it turned into a great conversation either because they mentioned like, yeah, I don't have a smartphone or, oh, wait, where are you traveling from? You know, and they made a friend in that process. And that's kind of a lost art. You know, we forget that there are other people out there that would be happy to tell you how to get to where you're going. And it's almost kind of can be a pleasure to ask that person versus just all kind of remaining in our little isolated smartphone bubbles. So, you know, I think it's definitely a person by person basis, you know, a subjective thing. But I do think that we probably do exaggerate our, you know, the excuses, the things that we've become so used to that we've convinced ourselves we absolutely can't live without. I think that if we try to go without these things, it can actually be self-empowering where you're like, hey, you know, I got there without the directions tool. You know, I survived a Tuesday without, you know, whatever it is that you think that you so desperately needed.
you mentioned there that most of these things are very subjective. You know, they come from different perspectives. And one of the criticisms that I have seen on the web, you know, either on videos that I have produced for the channel or other, you know, just articles, things of that nature that talk about feature phones or that talk about digital minimalism is essentially, you know, move on the nostalgic period of not having maps, not having a microcomputer on our pockets is gone. Don't attach yourself to the past, but just embrace the iPhone, embrace the galaxies, embrace the pixels, right? Like, you know, embrace this amazing devices that are technologically advanced. Stop living in the past. Just kind of like move on. But from your perspective, you started this company. So, you know, for people that have that perspective, why did you decide to not embrace these extra uber technological advancements in your life? And, you know, you created a whole company around it. But why is the question?
Yeah, I think we felt, and, you know, again, I think it's, we were always super self-aware to realize that we're not talking to 100% of smartphone users. We're probably only talking to a fraction of 1%, if that, of, you know, potential smartphone users. And I think what we saw was that obviously there's a ton of great technological advances in these tools and a lot of utility to be had from them. But, you know, the side effects of being so constantly, you know, connected, I almost say that in quotes, because, you know, it's a little bit isolating, was just so real that we noticed ourselves changing, whether that was, you know, me noticing my own habits or interviewing other users, you know, things like my attention span, which I never struggled with when it came to like sitting in my art studio. And now I have my iPhone and I find myself tinkering every, you know, 20 minutes needing to take a break for something. And, you know, seeing the ways that these tools actually like change us and are, you know, kind of like unquenchable thirst for more information. And, you know, as humans, we're vulnerable. And obviously a lot of these apps on our smartphones are engineered to use those very vulnerabilities against us. So, you know, it's kind of a, you know, a mixed bag where obviously you can argue that there's a lot of great things on the smartphone, being able to FaceTime with your grandma, like that's wonderful. But checking my email before I brush my teeth, that was, you know, having dire consequences on someone like me. And so I think we made the light phone not to say that everyone needs to, you know, completely ditch technology and not step forward, but to acknowledge that there's a time and place for certain technologies and that not every single person wants this glass, big, shiny rectangle that does essentially everything for everyone, you know, the smartphone. And that a lot of people like myself, you know, we were designing around, you know, our own needs and lifestyles, you know, totally embrace the internet and use it day in and out in our personal productive and work lives. But that by having it in the same device as my personal phone was kind of making us a little bit crazy. And so we just wanted to provide this, you know, alternative that we felt wasn't being considered in the landscape. You know, at the time of this Google program, it really seemed like, you know, VC money was getting injected at an all-time high. There was this kind of, you know, blueprint for a startup, you know, make something sticky that people will use for hours and hours. You'll make it free. You can, you know, scale it because it's a free software app. And then you'd have all this data and all these, you know, people that you can sell ads to. And, you know, that was kind of the golden business model, it seemed. And it seemed like everything was moving in that direction, whether or not it kind of started from a more righteous place. And I think, yeah, we just wanted to be an alternative. And I think one more point on that is for the Light Phone 2, we're trying to embrace some of those technological advances with the directions tool that we're working on now, for instance. And, you know, we would love to have an option for calling rideshare. We're trying to, within, you know, our small startup resources, as much as possible, bring some of these conveniences and utility from the smartphone to the light phone without needing to bring the whole kitchen sink of, you know, vulnerabilities that we often found ourselves falling into with the smartphone.
So for you, it's more of a balanced act and recognize those areas where technology has helped us become more productive and even, you know, makes it easier to find certain things or directions are not going to make anyone an addict. You know, it's something that is useful to find places. Maybe you're walking, things of that nature. And rideshare, of course, you mentioned, especially in big cities, that will happen. Maybe as a, you know, as we start kind of closing, I'd like to know a little bit more about, it's been about, 18 months now since the light phone became a reality, you know, in consumers' hands. You've probably been playing with prototypes for a little bit longer than that. But since that time, in your team as a company, right? How have you seen the change in people's lives or people that have become your employees? How do you transmit these principles? I know that there are people that listen to this podcast that they may have companies and they may espouse some of these principles, but how do you pass them down in a way that it doesn't come off, as we talked previously, like as a proselytizer?
Well, I think, you know, we don't pressure any of our employees or question which phone they use. If they want to have an Apple Watch on their wrist all day, you know, by all means, that's their choice. I think where we, you know, what we try to do is respect them and their time off, you know, knowing that we've kind of agreed upon this schedule together and that it's inappropriate for me to call them up on a Saturday morning if they're not working on that Saturday morning, or to start texting them or pinging them or slacking them or, you know, whatever the channel is. And I think it's really about respecting their time off, knowing that when they come back, if they were able to, you know, take a break from working on the light phone, they will be refreshed. And obviously we offer all of our employees, and most of them do have and use the light phone in their own ways. But I think about other businesses, we have started to see a few employees buy the light phone for their employees. Sorry, employers buying it for their employees, which is a really great thing, I think, because it's a gesture of the boss kind of putting it into an object by saying like, hey, I respect your time off, you know? Which I think is not always true of our kind of like, you know, email work lifestyle that many people kind of live in. It's really easy to find yourself checking, you know, at night or on the weekends and things like that. So it's I think it's really important to respect employees as you would want to be respected.
So in your, you know, in the company, you are more espousing some of the guidelines in which you have boundaries. Again, we started this conversation with boundaries and some of the boundaries that you set for yourself, and you have adopted some of those for your company. As a final question, and then I'll give you a final word where you can, you know, just express yourself. But essentially, you know, what are some of the things that you encourage some of the listeners to try out? You know, maybe somebody's on the fence. Maybe they don't have, you know, the monetary capabilities of buying a light phone. Maybe they found a different solution. But what are some of those principles that you have found in your life that have made you just a happier person?
I mean, I think there's a couple of really simple things someone can do on a smartphone. Most obviously, you know, being just kind of turning it off for an afternoon, whether that's just like, I'm going to leave the phone at home and walk to the park that I know exactly where it is. There will be no excuse for needing an Uber or directions or, you know, Apple Pay. Make sure you bring your credit card or cash, you know, and kind of try it for an afternoon and just see what it's like to kind of be in that kind of FOMO without your phone, initial anxiety. I think longer term steps that have made huge differences, both in my life when I was using a smartphone, as well as many other people whom we've chatted with, which is like starting to delete some of the more toxic apps. I think Cal Newport, in his book, Digital Minimalism, does a great job of kind of framing it with this question of like, you know, like, what are the biggest, I forget how he phrased it exactly, what are the biggest wins in terms of your digital tools, and which ones are kind of really taking you down and adding no value, and start cutting those out. You know, if having Twitter on your iPhone is the one thing that you keep finding yourself being like, God, why am I checking and checking and checking, you know, then try removing that. And maybe you'll see that you might find yourself finding new addictions. Perhaps maybe you're, you know, looking on Craigslist now or other platforms, but I think starting to just be more conscious and a little bit more, you know, honest with yourself about, like, you know, this product is kind of a problem for me. Like, I found myself back in the day on Instagram a lot. I think as an artist, it felt like this platform that was both, you know, friends and family, but also like clients and like your career. So it was this kind of like, it would feel productive and it would feel casual, but it was kind of neither. And so, you know, I kind of cut Instagram off my smartphone many years ago, and like that made a huge difference. I could still check it every now and then on my computer if I, you know, wanted to, but I wasn't feeling like I found myself just constantly stressing or feeling jealous or whatever these kind of feelings we might feel for some people. Maybe it's, you know, I find myself checking the news and getting so worked up, and, you know, there's nothing I can do about it, and then my day is thrown off. And, like, you know, start cutting those things as much as possible, which you should be able to do without buying our phone. I think our phone does take some of those things to a, you know, the next level in terms of really commitment and the object representing that commitment. But I think, you know, there's a huge gradient in between in terms of, you know, ways to find balance or not.
Absolutely. And I appreciate you saying that, because those are very good practical steps. You know, like leaving your phone for an afternoon, it's not going to kill anyone. You know, it's going to just allow you to decompress and, as you said, take a break. And of course, deleting apps, notifications, things of that nature can be helpful. You mentioned Cal Newport's, and this is the second time, you know, I mean, he's definitely one of the influential figures in the space, of course, you know, towards digital minimalism and productivity work, things of that nature. And, you know, I've been reading his book. I'm almost done with World Without Email, the new one that came out a week ago. It's just great. You know, it's just great to see how some principles can make it better for people. Like, you know, the social interactions, how can that makes us just better people? Well, Joe, thank you very much for coming into the show and for allowing us to interview you and, you know, get to know a little bit of a different ideas and what kind of was behind the Light Phone and how you've been interacting over the years. But let us know what's next for you. What's next? What are the future projects for the Light team? And anything else you want to say, this is your moment.
Totally. And thank you, of course, for having me and, you know, promoting this kind of alternative lifestyle in a way that's accessible, I think, for someone that might be curious to have a change of pace with their current smartphone relationship and might not know where to start, or the Light Phone might seem like an extreme thing. I'm sure coming across your videos and podcast is a kind of welcome intro to how, you know, a variety of people are doing it in different ways. And I think that's probably something that I'm super interested in, is forever learning from our users or our non-users, the different ways in which they hack and, you know, take control of their, you know, digital tools and their, you know, relationship to them. And I think coming up with the Light Phone, showcasing more examples of that, is something that we're really trying to do through kind of not testimonial, but more like kind of user studies, case studies that we might be able to share, interviews with other Light Phone users and stuff. So, you know, I think full support of what you're doing with this podcast. It sounds like a great idea. I think other things in terms of Light Phone news, you know, there's always a huge list of development things we have on our roadmap right now. The most notable one is the directions tool. It's kind of in an alpha state right now. Still in development and testing it internally, hoping to have that this spring. TBD exact timing of that, hopefully sooner spring than later spring, but we definitely want to do that one right. So that's really exciting. I know that's been probably the single-handedly most asked about feature that people ask about with the Lifephone. Rideshare and actually Spotify are probably like the close follow-ups. But so Directions is a big one. And then, you know, a ton of other just kind of light OS feature updates, probably in between, but mostly after that, as well as the SDK. I think that's something we're still really excited to give our users a little bit more control to, you know, make the phone more practical for them and to even inspire some, you know, creative juices there. And we want to make it in a way that it's more accessible than less accessible for someone that maybe only dabbles with code, like someone like myself that isn't a developer, would be able to look at this SDK and make something kind of work. So I think it could be a really, really fun tool. So that's really exciting. And, you know, I guess we're just trying to keep the ship growing and staying afloat as long as possible. Our struggle this last year has been in terms of inventory. We've been, you know, running out of inventory and then needing the money to get the new phones. And then like that in-between delay where we're sold out so constantly. So I think we're really trying to secure much larger order quantities so that we can have the phones to share with the people, because we get so lucky that there is a demand for such a project. So just trying our best to be there to fulfill that demand and have the things like Directions and other of these utilities available so more people would feel comfortable giving it a shot. And so I think, yeah, all of our ethos is kind of in trying to make the phone more accessible. You know, any feature we add, it's not about trying to now make it a smartphone, but, you know, trying to help people who are maybe on the fence or scared to give it a try to have a few more of those, you know, for lack of a better term, comforts of the smartphone available. So we're really excited to keep the ball rolling there. And, you know, thanks again for having us.
Thanks again, Joe, for being in the show. You have been listening to the Dumb Phone Show. And if you want to participate or you want to nominate somebody for participation, make sure to contact us at thedumbphoneshow@gmail.com. Again, thanks for listening. And as always, we remind you to stay focused on your goals.